This is Rapholix After Hours.
Welcome, listeners, to episode 24 of Rack Addicts After Hours. I'm Ben, and it gives me incredible pleasure to reintroduce Andy.
Hello.
He's back. Woo! He has the internet, and he's
and a microphone.
Coming to us live from the one and only Burfield Recording Studios. Thank you very much for joining us. We've got Pete, and we've got Telmo. And I would say, as usual, Andy, but you've been gone for so long.
I know.
Do you even remember how this all plays out? But we're going to catch up with everyone's week first. I'm just going to quickly go into my week. I have been smashing a game called Hollow Knight on the Nintendo Switch. It's a platformer, and it's just such a beautiful game. It's got a really, really nice soundtrack. The way it's paced means it's kind of teaching you all the new powers you have in a really nice way. I can't say enough good things about it. Play Hollow Knight, because there's a sequel coming soon. And I have a subharmonicon now as well, which if you were here 3 episodes ago, I might have said there was potentially a new release, something that was all secret. That was it. Here it is. But we'll dig into that later. What have you chippity chaps been doing? Andy, we're most excited to hear from you, because you have multiple weeks to catch us up on.
Yeah, no, I've been away. So obviously it's been a little bit, to begin with, a difficult thing coming up to the studio with the social distancing and all of that jazz. So I've been trying to keep all that in mind. Recently I have been able to get up here. So really, the biggest thing that we've done is gone through and tried to streamline everything as much as possible from the point of view of what's coming out of the desk and how it's all flowing. So I think, if I remember rightly, the last time we spoke, we'd managed to get hold of the Crane Song Quantum.
I don't think it had arrived yet. Maybe.
But it has arrived now, and it sounds so good. it's really cool. So that's the last thing in our chain. So, I mean, just the detail that thing goes into is incredible, and some of the sort of tonal shaping you can do is excellent. So since that came in, it's then been a bit of a shift in the way that we do our organizing and how the system flows. So I've been learning about digital signaling and the way that all of that syncs up, clocking, jitter, dither, all of these things that, to be honest, I hadn't really paid too much attention to now, but have become really important, because the way that we've changed things up, our monitoring has, the long and short of it, it's improved. So even if you're making sort of like half dB, 1 dB clicks, you're kind of hearing it come through a lot more. And all of the equipment that you've got in, we're starting to hear it in even more detail now, which has been really cool. So that's prompted us to change the way that our signal flows. And without getting too into it, all the boring AES, BIDIF, and blah blah blah, it works like a dream now. So it's been pretty cool, and being able to route it into an external computer so we can use the internet and it goes into the outside world has been really good. Other than that, we've done a little bit of, well, Kieran, I should say, who's come on the podcast before, was up here and did a bit of soldering. It was quite a horrific job for him, so I'd just give him a bit of a shout out for that one, and it's worked out really well.
Was he fixing things, making new connections?
Making new connections. So I think it was basically, we had a loom that needed extending and putting different tips on the end of it. So it was a good 2-day job basically to get that all done. Again, sort of plans have changed in that respect. I don't know, again, how much I've spoken about. It's been a little while, guys, so if I'm repeating myself. What was to be the new live room is now going to be the new control room. So that's being moved over, and I think all of you guys, I'm right in thinking, have come up to the studio beforehand. What is the control room at the moment, and the live room will become one large live room. So there'll be plenty of space to be doing full band recordings and everything like that. And the new control room is being built at the moment. So an incredible kind of amount of details being going into it, from the sort of soundproofing, or not proofing rather, but the absorption between the walls and the plastic membrane to go in and on it. That's all being put up now. The electricians come in, so we have light. And it's now just a question of waiting for plastering to get going.
And then you'll have the fun task of moving everything in at some point as well.
Yeah, all of these cables being made are soon to be ripped out to go into
Kieran's
the new room.
Happy about that one.
Oh, he's thrilled. But to be honest, the most of it's already been done, and all of the cables that we're making up now have been done with the move in mind. So lengthwise, it shouldn't be too much of a problem. It's just going to be like physically moving the equipment one way to the other. The only other thing that I can think of is with getting the internet, we've now been kind of gearing up for remote mastering, which is cool. So obviously people can send in files, and we can do it in the sort of traditional sense. So you send us the file in, we master it, we send it back out to you, and it's all happy days. What connecting up the Crane Song has meant is that I can do that all live now. So in the same way that we're chatting on a Zoom meeting, I can send the audio out from the Crane Song straight into this computer here, hook it up, and you'd all be able to hear it live as it's happening. So any of those little tweaks that we're making when
so
doing
remote attended mastering sessions,
that's
now
what we're calling it.
Yeah.
So that's the game plan. With that. Exactly. Yeah, and the same applies for mixing as well. So we can go through mixes together. Because, I mean, the thing that, I'm sure, you know, everyone's missing out on is that kind of contact and that interaction, especially, you know, me in the studio. What I love is having, you know, the artist or producer or whoever sat down, and we're kind of bouncing ideas off each other and everything like that. And with this stuff that's going on now, you're really missing out on it. So we wanted to come up with a way that we'd be able to kind of get a little bit of that back. And through this now, so it's kind of, like you say, sort of remote attended sessions, because you're getting the same feed that my speakers are. So we're listening to the same thing, and we can kind of go backwards and forwards with it. So yeah,
sounds
I'm
pretty good.
Super excited about that. It's really
kicks
cool.
Off nice and soon then.
Yeah. Well, you can. Oh, sorry to keep going on. The other thing.
so much news.
So much
news. Because you've been away for so
long. I know, right? the last thing, and again, it's a bit of a shout out to Kieran as well. But most importantly, the website's been completely overhauled. So if you check that out,
I'm actually going to do that now.
Yeah,
I haven't
have a look.
Been since I saw the other one with Pete's epic kind of B-roll in there.
Still featured the epic work by Pete.
Is it BurfieldRecordingStudio.com? That's the one.
That's
isn't it?
.com. Burfield.
Here we
B-U-R-G-H field.
Ooh, little remote mastering.
Oh, I like that.
Top.
That's
and
it.
Still got all the
10%
B-roll
off
still
of
there.
Your first master. Great.
Yeah, indeed. With the promo code. Check out the website.
Pete,
out.
You did such a good job
you
on
did.
That on that kind of trailer.
It's
it
absolutely
so
fantastic.
Good.
Great pictures. I'm loving the pictures as well. I like the casual sitting by
you
the
see,
desk.
I love those
picture.
Yeah, I love all the panning when you have that sharp plane of focus and you just see it all kind of throw in. That's really really delicious. And of course, we got Tom and Jerry on top of the coffee table as well.
Yes.
Lovely stuff. Well, Pete, what have you been up to?
As you recall from several podcasts ago, and I think we touched base with it last week, I'd fallen in love with the Omsomic Sarcastic Inspiration
yes,
Generator.
You did.
Is there news?
Well, there is news, but it doesn't relate directly to Omsomic. And as I said last week, they had contacted me and said, yes, well, you're on the list, and we've got component issues, and we'll let you know when they're available. And I recall you telling me, when I was first discussing it, you were saying, oh, I'm sure somebody else does something.
Oh, what, the Vimona Melodicer?
Yes, so I have it here.
No. Oh, no, Pete.
So I hadn't really, because a lot of modular stuff had been passing me by, because I sort of have phases of modular lust, or phases of, you know, sort of not falling in and out of love with modular, but you kind of get distracted with other things, and you think, well, I should be using what I've got and not really paying attention. And that it just came across my attention. I came across a relatively recent, I'm thinking, I can't remember what trade show it was. I think it was late 2019, and it was, they had the full production one, and I had missed all the prototypes they'd demonstrated previously. So I saw it and I just thought, oh, I need one of those. It sounds like the same thing, but slightly different design and so forth. So I had a fish around, and it would appear that Juno had several in stock. And so I immediately purchased one.
Mm-hmm.
When you read the description, it also describes it as being, it doesn't call it an inspiration generator, but it still calls it a stochastic device. So it's certainly working on the same principle. So it's the same sort of, it's got all the sort of 12 semitones, and then you nudge sliders up to increase the probability of that semitone playing, and then you've got several other adjustments that seem to comport with the Ensomic product. The one clear difference, with the Ensomic, you can get an expander and then have four tracks, effectively, that are all independent. And this is only a single track device. But it does have memories, so that you can actually store. So if there is anything particular that you generate from it and it's very inspirational, you can actually send it to some sort of memory and keep it. So
that this clearly means that you need both.
Of course I'll be getting the other one when it comes to this stuff. But I'll see how I go with this one. I mean, they're kind of about the same price if you sort of get the Ensomic with the expander. So this one, I think I paid £376, I want to say, for it, £376. But not a lot of chatter about it. I mean, Sonic State had featured the prototype and a few other people, but there wasn't a big hoo-ha about it. So I'm not sure if people are not really that interested in it, or it's kind of gone under the radar somewhat.
I think it's one of those ones, because it's been prototyped a lot, people might see it and go, oh, that could be interesting, but it's prototype, it's going to be forever, and then forget about it, then kind of ignore the updates, maybe.
Yes.
Have you had it racked up yet?
Yeah, I specifically pulled it out the rack so I could wave it in front of the camera for you guys.
A little surprise.
The dramatic,
but I have been sort of noodling with it, and it's not instant gratification. You have to work somewhat and try and understand it. The instructions, and there is a small instruction book that comes with it, and I believe the Vimona, are they a French company?
Or German?
Possibly. Anyway, it's clearly, the book is clearly a translation from another language.
Right.
Put it politely. So the English is
Italian.
slightly bizarre. If sure. You see what I'm saying? You know when translations are more literal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
My whole life.
I mean. So I you're reading through, and I'm sort of thinking, I'm not really comprehending what they're saying here. I'm going to have to sort of work at it, and obviously, again, because there's not many videos that really go into, you know, there's not a nice, as far as I'm aware, there's not a sort of this is how you use it from one of the usual characters that normally does that sort of thing on like DivKid or someone like that on YouTube, that go through it in excruciating detail. But at least it's all the information's there, or one of the others where they've even put the sort of
timestamps
in the actual video notes so that you can jump in. So I'm going to pretty much have to work it out for myself. In fact, I might have to do a video myself, because
yay.
Well, the only ones I found were people that have purchased them and they're just having a bit of a fiddle, but they don't really talk about what they're doing. And the gentleman demonstrating it sort of talks about it, but it's you know, he's enthusiastic, obviously, because it's his product. I mean, the difference is the Sonic State, when they feature the prototype, it's a different colour, but it's also all the, if you could see, and I'm holding this up to the camera for all those who obviously can't see what I'm doing, all the stuff to the side where all the sliders are were in the original prototype, but this side, all this programming's bit on this side is all new. It's been added subsequently in the actual production version. So a lot of these buttons seem to be multifunction. So I really haven't. I just sort of, once I get it going, I just sort of wildly press the buttons. And sort of, yeah. Is that making any difference? But there's definitely occasionally, it'll suddenly, because you can sit there going, well, I want to do a nice A minor chord. Or an A minor 7 or something like that, and you can set that up, and then you can you've got two what they call dice buttons. So one's for rhythm and one's for melody. So you can quickly tap the melody and it will play the notes in a different sequence, so you get a different melody altogether. So it's literally just sitting there and just sort of fiddling and getting that sort of happy accident. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, that thing with the manual reminds me of one of the classic Top Gear Trio moments where they were trying some like really old cars, and because all of the control scheme was different, they had sort of the manual, and I think it was translated from French, but like Google translated. So it's just going, take the handle of embrayage to its maximum ferocity. Kind of like trying to figure out how to drive a car with that.
So
yeah, Telmo, time for your weekly update.
Weekly
please.
Update, everybody.
Catch us up.
Yeah, I had a pretty busy week, guys. I've done so much stuff. So I've been working on my Latin jazz, which is quite erudite. I've been working on that sort of stuff, trying to apply some of the Barry Harris's method knowledge that I've been taking for the past few weeks that I've been doing all of this study. As I've mentioned, and trying to apply into a more of a like a samba rhythm, and learning a lot of like Brazilian tunes and stuff like that. So I've been working on that. Been trying to up my social media game. Been trying to looking after, you know, articles and how to properly expose your image as a musician to be able to take the most profit out of. And people to be able to see you as a professional. Been doing some research on that. I had a really interesting time about 3 or 4 days ago with one of my best mates, Andy knows him well, Abel Quintana.
I love
yeah,
Abel.
Yeah, he's, for those who don't know, he's a lecturer at ACM in Clapham in London, the Academy of Contemporary Music. He's a producer, he teaches production, and I had a little Zoom session with him. He was kind enough to take me through vocal mixing techniques and what I should use, how I should use, which are the compressors, limiters. And he was kind enough to jump into my system and to kind of like guide me through the do's and don'ts of how to and where to place, you know, a main vocals and backing vocals, which is really helpful. I want to thank him as well. If he's listening, Abel, good to see you. Good to hear you. He's doing okay as well in the middle of all of this pandemic, which is good.
Good.
And apart from that, I've been also having a wee look. Every time I have a little 5 minute break, I just, you know, I go on YouTube and I Google, I just write down something like subharmonic on, and I get little excited. I saw this video of this guy playing on the new Moog Superharmonic, and it sounded like literally like a violin. It was brilliant. Ben, what can you tell us more about the subharmonic? Because I'm really, really excited to hear.
Smooth.
My time has come.
Please.
Obviously, because the shop's open, I haven't had to talk about it to any customers or anything. Yeah, I've been waiting for one for about 2 years since they did the prototype at Moogfest. Now, if what I imagine that guy did with the thing that you said it was sounding kind of like a violin is you have your two oscillator banks,
yep,
shall we call them. There's definitely going to be a way you can set up the kind of the harmonic structure using the mixer to essentially create a fundamental and what would be a series of overtones that might match what a violin uh-huh. kind of sounds like. Obviously, that's sort of backwards from how it's meant to be. So you start with a high pitch and then you make subharmonics, so going down. But yeah, if you use all six kind of pitch mm-hmm. sources and then play that just with MIDI, you get this massive like either sort of chord transposition thing or just a really big big sound, kind of like you're going unison on a polysynth or something. But no, it's been really cool that the sequencer is just as inspiring as I expected. Pete, you said with the melodicer, you kind of twiddle things and kind of hope and then hone in on something once it gives you an idea. It's exactly what's been happening with the sequencer, so it's going well. I did a little live stream for my first patches, and kind of ended up with a nice little sequence that lent itself to a little techno type thing. I didn't really develop it very far, but it was so quick, and it's so much fun to explore. I did find there are quite a lot of disadvantages in the patch bay kind of area, because it's just the 4x8 that's on the Mother 32 and the DFAM. You don't have an external audio input, which pains me greatly. You can't use that lovely Moog filter for anything but the subharmonicon's internal kind of oscillators. It also doesn't have separate triggers for the envelopes. There's just one and they trigger together. But no, there's limitations. I am a little bit gutted about the implementation of the envelopes and not having access, full access to the filter. But it sounds amazing. Just give it a bit of delay, a bit of reverb, and it is beautiful. Really,
it
really
sounds very inspiring just on its own. I gotta say, very
definitely
inspiring.
That's why I got it, an idea machine.
Do you have any feelings about getting to the other of the trio at all, or you're a bit sort of meh about the sort of the Mother 32?
No, well, I think they're both great. The DFAM is probably less appealing, just because it's what I like to describe it to people as just being a really interesting, like, electronic shaker substitute, because you can do kick and snare patterns, but because you have no reset, it's difficult to integrate with other systems, so it just, the sequencer constantly goes, which can be a little bit of a pain. And the Mother 32 is cool. It's a great little monosynth, but there are other great little monosynths around.
I mean, I as you know, I let my Mother 32 go, and I don't often let hardware go. But it was just, I just wasn't using it. It just, I hadn't sort of integrated it into any of my modular. It was standalone, and it was just, I was just looking at it thinking, well, I could possibly get something else that would be more useful to me. So
yeah,
I think that I got rid of that. It might even be about a year ago, because I ordered mine really, I pre-ordered it when the it's quite a few years back now, and it would have been about 4 years, I want to say, when they first bought
it.
The
it did came out quite a few years ago.
They kind of and so forth. And again, I did highly use it. I've typically found the sequencer on the Mother 32 a bit sort of obtruse.
I mean, there's a firmware update that came out a few weeks ago that I think has fixed a couple of issues, but no, it's not that interesting. I think if I wanted a semi-modular monosynth, I think the top of my list is still the what's it called? It's a German company. This is Guess the Synth now. It's a German company. It's been used by Nick Batt quite a lot. The MFB Dominion 1, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Massive, three oscillators, really good sequencer, lots of fun ring mod things, built like an absolute sledge brick block breeze thing, I don't know. And it just sounds fatter than any Moog I've heard.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Fatter than any mother.
But I think I would agree with the actual subharmonica, because it's the unusual design and the way it works. I can see the appeal.
Yeah, I mean, they prioritise the patch bay to give you access to its special weirdness, which I totally understand. But no, it's definitely doing what I wanted.
So do you think it's going to be a keeper? Because I know that you don't necessarily hang on to equipment that long. You're much more...
No, I shift it around quite a lot. We shall see over the next few weeks, but I reckon it's definitely leaning that way.
Cool.
More than the Instruo CSL has done anyway, because the CSL is amazing, but it's I don't know if it'll be an instant yes, this is staying forever, because I still I was hoping to have that Moog filter on hand to then feed the CSL into and get some really juicy stuff. But since I can't do that, I still need a proper filter in here somewhere and maybe some low pass gates. Once that's done, then it'll
purchase yourself a humpback or something like that. I mean, they're reasonably expensive.
Yeah, I might do. What I've actually got my eyes on is the Nano Modules font, which is quite small, kind of basic, but it really sounds juicy. And then there's the Meng Key low-pass gate, which is passive, and you can buy it for about £50 if you can't get the kit. So that's what I've got my eye on. But I do need a proper envelope or function generator, maybe the Duranalog slope function. I can't remember what it's called. There's a Duranalog single envelope slew limiter LFO thing. So I've got my eye on one of those. Anyway, rack plans. Not that exciting. But in speaking of things that people are excited about, Telmo is excited about a certain B word that's going to return to the podcast. Behringer have now announced a monopoly. Absolutely. And Telmo, do you want to take us through why you're so excited while I quickly look for a YouTube video that would be a good watch?
Well, the monopoly is one of those synths. It's for me what defines early 80s, really. And it was used all the way up to, you know, even modern psychedelia music. Looking at the notes, I mean, I've got the Chemical Brothers, MGMT, the Depeche Mode, which was one of my favorite 90s bands, but also a loads of early 80s synth pop stuff uses the monopoly. I mean, it just looks awesome. It sounds great. I mean, it's nice and portable. What I like about the looks of this Behringer version or clone of the monopoly is that
Wait, no, it's not a clone. It's
a tribute. This is a tribute. Is that it kind of like the panel lifts up really nicely, just like the Poly D. So
yeah, and the old Model D, and actually the special edition of the Sequential Pro 3. I'm a bit of a sucker for that, actually. Yeah. I think it looks really cool.
Yeah, it's nice.
So that's one of the things aesthetically. And then obviously, you know, it can be shared in a four-voice polyphonic mode. It sounds brilliant. All the waveforms are there. Yeah, you can't really go wrong. Have you heard of this, Andy?
Yeah, I was just literally fizzing through the show notes. Haven't had a chance to give it a listen just yet, but I will be
checking
it out.
What I do, actually, Andy, is this YouTube video that I was looking for was how I was first introduced to the existence of the monopoly. It's a guy called Kibu.
Kibu.
It's K-A, not K-A anything, K-E-B-U on YouTube. He did a cover of The Velt by Deadmau5 using all analog gear. So he's got an 808, like the original stuff. He's got an 808, and the monopoly features really heavily on his cover. So he's got the monopoly. I'm pretty sure there's a Model D in there somewhere. Like it's a bit of a star-studded cast of really good vintage synths, but the monopoly's in there and it sounds so juicy.
Yeah.
And I think it's all recorded to tape as well.
Nice.
which is really
so
cool.
So it's just an extra step.
Yeah, but that's an excellent cover to watch. Fantastic. And that'll give you a good idea of the sound.
Yeah, I'll give
and
it a listen.
Behringer's probably going to nail it.
Yeah, well, they seem to be doing a pretty good job. I must admit, I'm thinking about investing, as I always do say, but now I have a very good reason to investing in a couple of synths, and Behringer is obviously pretty high up on the list. I was pretty convinced by the Poly D. That seemed like a very cool way to go, but I must admit, this Monopoly does sound pretty interesting.
I think this one might be a better bet for you than the Poly D, because it's much closer to the original, where the Poly D was a bit of an experiment in some respects.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't think this doesn't have any effects, does it? It's
Are they still using Clarktechnic effects?
This
one doesn't. This is that they've been much more faithful to the original in this respect. I don't believe they've added any effects. I think they've just kept this clean. And I know when on the Behringer video, when they're doing the demo, they actually, there's little bit, I don't know if it was in the text below the video, it actually came up in the video, and they make a point that they're using an effects processor to sort of, I see. On top of it. So I don't think there's anything in there. I also, when this sort of popped up last week when they did their announcements and the chatter started on the interweb and so forth, I had a quick look on the eBay and, to see what the originals are going for. They're they go for a good £1,800 to £2,000.
Oh, there's a chunk. A there's chunk. Definitely worse out there. But that's
some of those had chunk. Been MIDI modified. Obviously, this was pre-MIDI when this was released. In 81, but you do pay handsomely for one of these if you want an original.
And do you have sort of guesstimate from Behringer?
$599.
Is that official or is that Pete Special?
No, that's what I've read from some of the sort of music hardware magazines that have published descriptions.
Yeah, given its similarity to the Poly D, I think it's quite likely. But no, I reckon it's going to be great. I was testing a Poly D. On Saturday for, I think it was an international order. I had it plugged into a speaker and just, you know, going through playing some big old bassy kind of filtery wubs and just summoned staff just kind of came round the corner going, what is that sound? What are you doing? Because it just sounded massive.
I love that when you're playing about with something and, you know, someone will poke their head through the door and it's like, what's that? It's like, let me tell you a story.
It happened once when I was testing speakers with the Doom 2016 soundtrack the more metalhead of the staffing just sort of poke around the corner and go, is that Mick Gordon? it was pretty good.
Yeah, I do miss that.
It's always going to be good if a synth can elicit that kind of response from what's, be honest, mostly guitarists that aren't that big on synths. And they're like, oh, that's a
what's
sound.
That pedal you're using?
So yeah,
is that a metal zone?
Frequencies going on there.
it's going to be good. I'm looking forward to
it. Yeah, no, I'm very impressed with as we always say, the offerings these days that you can get.
I'm still going to be saving up money and space for the ARP Quadra when that comes out. I'm going to be all over that.
I mean, I haven't seen an ETA for this Monopoly yet at any stage. So, and obviously, supply chains. So we've talked that subject to death. So who knows?
To be honest, if you ask me, Pete, I don't think it's going to take long. I don't think it's going to take long, considering things are kind of going back to normal in terms of manufacturing back in China. I think, maybe give it a month or so to be out there, I should say. I mean, I'm just supposing, but, you know.
I mean, having said that, I mean, Behringer sort of have a sort of reputation of struggling even prior to all these difficult times.
The DD3 is just not really.
There's a few. I mean, even some of the early ones, they took forever. Mm-hmm. I mean,
if I remember rightly, when they said that they were going to arrive, they did arrive. Am I right in thinking for release dates? It took a while to get the release date, but when the release date came, it was pretty exactly. on the money.
Well, it all went a bit pear shaped when they changed their UK distribution model.
That was a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah, that was
that's when it all went a bit strange.
Yeah,
I thought.
Totally. So I reckon that's going to be drawing us to a close, but it's going to be time for us to give you a quick recommendation, potentially musical or potentially perhaps a YouTube channel or two, just to buy you some time, something to twiddle your thumbs with while you're stuck inside at home, as you should be, of course, at home.
Indeed.
Anybody got anything? Because I actually did not prepare myself. Let's use mine. Okay, let's go The Velt cover by Kibu on YouTube. That'll be my homework for you. Who's next?
I've got I'll come in with one of my non-musical ones, which I normally do, as I say, from my extensive. I have had a look at my list. I think in my subscription list, I've got 168 subscriptions.
Oh, my.
You know what it's like. You subscribe and sometimes they're not that... they don't publish that often, so nothing much comes up. The one I would like to flag up this week is one called Jules Guides. And this gentleman is, I believe he or was an actor of some description. And I think he actually does this or used to do this before the lockdown. I don't know how he's faring at the moment, but he does walking tours of London.
So he does tour guides. I might actually come across one of those videos.
And he's quite a tall gentleman, and he wears sort of a jacket and has a bowler hat and an umbrella. But he does lots of videos, and he's been doing these for a number of years. And I had sort of subscribed quite a long time ago. Then there was a period, especially at the beginning of the lockdown, where I was just sort of binge watching them, and I actually got quite into them heavily. And so he'll concentrate on a certain small area of London. And he's very knowledgeable, and he's very good at presenting. Unfortunately, the guides normally used to end up with him in one of the local pubs, and he has published a couple during the lockdown. And unfortunately, he sort of ends up by the pub, but he cannot enter.
Yeah, of course.
But it's just the little quirks, and he clearly lives in the centre of London, and has for a time, and his family has, because he's got a lot of connections he comments on in occasions. But yes, generally quite an interesting little watch. And again, none of the videos are particularly too long. I mean, the longest ones I'm seeing on here, but sort of sub 20 minutes. And there's a reasonable pace, and yes, they're very informative. So you can have sort of, these times where it's difficult to travel. And I believe his following and people watch from all around the world. So it's one of those things that anyone that's interested in London in any shape or form, they might be coming to London for a visit, or like myself. I mean, we all live literally. I mean, you can almost describe that we live in London. We're sort of very much on the outskirts. Yeah. Where we are, and as usual, as it always is, that you know when you live near somewhere, you tend to not visit it. You don't don't feel the need to go there, because it's one of those things. It's always there. You just think, well, it's always there. I can go anytime. So yeah. You end up never going.
Well, you go for the thing that you have to do, and then you don't really do the
do the thing. Yes, but so he goes into some really deep nooks and crannies, and It's
I don't know why
I
visualize him as like a male Mary Poppins with an umbrella.
like I was thinking more along the lines of Tool Mark Corrigan doing the
yeah man. Well, I can totally go next. I would totally recommend, guys, if you have heard or know of Wolfpack.
Yes.
If you don't, it's definitely worth it. It's definitely worth it. So they have this side project, which is called the Fearless Flyers, which is basically involves having Nate Smith on drums, which is one of the grooviest drummers in the world, along with a bass, a baritone guitar, and a guitarist. So those are the Fearless Flyers, the original. But now they've introduced the Delta Force, which is the equivalent of the guitar, but in brass, which is great. So if you're on YouTube, take 5 minutes, go and check on the Fearless Flyers introducing Delta Force. They're calling in reinforcements to get the funk to the people. If you, on a more serious note, I've been, as I said earlier, I've been, doing a lot of research in terms of like social media and marketing and algorithms and stuff like that. One of the guys that's been helping me with that is Damien Keyes. He's an entrepreneur. He's a social media expert on YouTube. He's from Brighton originally, and he's known for helping out bands and guiding artists to fulfill their success and trying to build an audience. So definitely check it out. Damien space Keyes. So Damien Keyes.
Nice one. Andy, it's your turn.
Okay.
Is it going to be a banger for your first podcast back?
Yeah. I use YouTube for two things. It's either trying to work out something that I don't know in audio or working out how to cook something new. So I'm going to go on the cooking side of it to keep it varied. And
I think that'll be a first for us.
Oh, it'll be a first. Oh, good. I won't be too worried about it then. The one that I'd recommend to check out is a little channel called Binging with Babish, that I'm completely obsessed by, and his videos are awesome. They're super simple when it's a super simple thing, but it's explained in a great way. It's a great sense of humor. It's just nice and easy to watch, and there's loads of, if you're interested in stuff that's been done from movies, he does a ton of those. So any like kind of popular culture that's like features food, he's probably made it. But he also does a basic series, which is really good just for getting into cooking, which is really the only other thing that I've been doing during the lockdown. So that would be my recommendation to check it out. You've probably already seen it come up. It's by no means a small channel, but if you haven't checked it out, you definitely should.
Absolutely, definitely would recommend as well. I've been watching for a little bit. Haven't actually tried any of his recipes yet. Have you tried anything?
Yeah, maybe? I've tried a few. They're all good.
Yeah, the other channel, the only, I suppose, other YouTube channel I've cooked from is Joshua Weissman's. I've done his bagel. Well, I've actually done now 10 batches of his bagels, and they do work.
He's brilliant definitely as well. Work. He is absolutely brilliant. I haven't tried out any of his recipes yet, but...
No, I just enjoy it when he's sort of just finished proving some dough or something, and he sort of goes, yeah, and you just got to plop that thick boy right out of there. that always cracks me up.
It's like, either that, it's like, you got to make it quippy.
Yeah, quippy. Yeah, he's good fun.
Yeah, it's the editing style on that I like. It's horrifically cringe, and I know that I shouldn't laugh at it, but I can't help at doing it every time.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of laughing at himself when he does it.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, proper
keep him coming, guys. I'm
no pressure, Andy. You got to remember what you've cooked.
Let me have it. Come back to me. Let me fizz through his recipes. Let me just.
Okay, since we're basically at the end, you'll have to tell us next week, which will be Rack Addicts After Hours, episode 25. So thank you for listening, and you'll hear us, but we won't hear you in the next one. So it's goodbye from me. I'm Ben. It's goodbye from Pete, Andy, Telmo. See you in the next one. Farewell.